The Major Spoilers podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
And I'm Stephen, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
In this issue, we prepare for a dungeon crawl in the Tomb of Annihilation, while Steven's in the Batcave and I'm at Titan's Tower and all's right with the world. Then prepare to embrace our destiny, and I don't mean your lady friend who's putting herself through college either. It's Destiny New York in our trade paperback spotlight. All the world's a stage, but it's a really awkward one we hope we're going to grow out of soon enough so that we can become head cheerleader, you guys, because the Major Spoilers podcast is on the air.
Welcome to issue 732 of the Major Spoilers podcast. Thank you so much for downloading and sharing this episode with a friend. It's just Matthew and I this week. That's okay. Rodrigo's off doing Rodrigo things, and Ashley, well, let's just say sometimes bosses are evil.
That's why
I'm not me.
Anyone.
And not me. So there you go. That's got to be a plus, right?
You are an evil boss, but
no, I'm a nice boss. When Rodrigo says, "Hey, man, I can't do it. I'm going to go do some things." I'm like, "Okay." And Ashley says, "Hey, I can't come in tonight." I'm like, "Yeah, okay. Well, I understand. Go do your thing."
Yeah, the one time that I was homesick, dead, I'm like, "I'm really sick, man." You're like, "So you can talk on the show?"
Yeah, you can talk. You can breathe. You're at home.
Yeah, what are you doing?
What are you doing? I know what we're doing. Let's do some news. We've got the new Dungeons & Dragons storyline has been announced. The Fantastic Four return to Marvel Legendary, and Sin City TV series is in the works. Let's spin that wheel of destiny and let Matthew decide where it lands this week. Because really, we could talk about any of these.
Well, it's not landing on three, I'll tell you that for free.
I didn't figure
number
it would.
One.
Okay, well, the new Dungeons & Dragons storyline was announced this past weekend during the Stream of Annihilation, and that was probably a little hint right there, because the next storyline, which will come out in September, is called Tomb of Annihilation. The talk of the streets and taverns has all been about the so-called death curse, a wasting disease afflicting everyone who's ever been raised from the dead. Victims grow thinner and weaker each day, slowly but steadily sliding toward the death they once denied. When they finally succumb, they can't be raised, and neither can anyone else, regardless of whether they've ever received the miracle in the past. Temples and scholars of divine magic are at a loss to explain the curse that has afflicted the entire region and possibly the entire world. The cause is a necromantic artifact called the Soulmonger, which is located somewhere in Chunt, a mysterious peninsula far to the south, ringed with mountains and choked with rainforest. Adventures. Oh, man, Matthew, that sounds like an adventure. It's an adventure designed for levels 1 through 11.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to be, I think, kind of interesting because people are getting out of the Sword Coast, which has been one of the big regions since 5th edition launched, 4 years ago or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So what are your thoughts? Well, what are your thoughts on Tomb of Annihilation?
I kind of like the sound of it.
Yeah, it does sound fun.
I'm worried about the whole concept of, oh, you can never, ever be raised again. I feel like sometimes adding that kind of an artificial stipulation can make the story feel forced. But
yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, you know, one of the most terrible moments in my role-playing history is when they botched a resurrect and I was dead for eternity.
Yeah. You've shared that story before. Here's why I kind of like the idea is because a lot of times when we are out playing, it's just like, oh, if you die, we can resurrect you. I've got this resurrect spell. Now, right, with this Soulmonger thing out there sucking up everyone's death resurrections,
yep,
it kind of... It is that MacGuffin that gets the party out of the tavern and on the road to Southern Horrors.
On the road to Rhode Island. Yeah. And I haven't done it, but when I've been playing my Diabler 3, they mm-hmm. keep saying, you know, you can go to hardcore mode, and if your character dies, she's dead forever. I'm like, oh, crap. Do I want to do that? I mean, that seems like a real challenge, and it seems mm-hmm. like it could add a little extra spice to that, but I wouldn't necessarily go in there with a character who would be my favorite, because what if she dies?
Right.
You know?
Yeah, there's a whole slew of stuff that Wizards of the Coast is putting out over the next couple of months. I believe it starts in August, And of course, a lot of this is going to be tied into the D&D Next, which is their online, I guess, replacement for the compendium that we used to subscribe to, and some of us still do because we're playing a fourth edition game. Right. But there's new dice, there's new play mats, there's all sorts of stuff that's coming out, including a brand new board game, a new Dungeons and Dragons board game set in this realm. And I'm very excited about the board game. We will probably be reviewing these products as they're sent to us. We're going to get a couple of other new manuals, a couple of other things that are coming our way. But I do have a question.
Mm-hmm.
The adventure of the Tomb of Annihilation. And this is one of their season things. I mean, the Frost Giants, I think, was the last one that we had.
Right.
This is for levels 1 through 11. And it seems like many of the modules that we're getting from Wizards of the Coast are for these low-level adventures. I don't remember seeing, like, Frost Giants Fury, if that one has modules that go beyond, like, level 10 or 15 or anything like that. And I'm wondering, do people, I mean, obviously, you want people to start into your adventure, and if you want new people to come on board, you're going to have a level one. But I'm wondering if there aren't people who haven't finished Frost Giants Fury and haven't finished the Dragons storyline, if they're not sitting there going, man, our level 10 people are ready to go wage war. Give me something that's going to take me through 10 through 15, and Tomb of Annihilation only takes them one level higher. And really, my guess is the way the campaign is set up is you start at level 1, and by the time you finish, you will be up to 11.
Could be. I don't know. I mean, I've played games where I was not strong enough to do what was going on, and I've played games where we were clearly well beyond the scope of the adventure. So I can see both sides of it, but I think that the important bit is that they're identifying it and saying levels 1 to 11. I mean, does 5e still have the 30 level cap?
I think it's 20, but I'm not for sure.
If it's 20, that's even better, because that's more than 50% of, that's actually 55% of 20 levels if it's 1 to 11. So, you know, if it was something where there were 65 levels and 1 to 11 was all you got, this is clearly something for starters. This is clearly, you know, a starter set. But I don't know if it's 1 to 11 out of a possible 20.
Yeah, it looks like 20 is the level limit.
I'm kind of fine with that. I mean, that really gets you well past the center portion of your hero career to where you have to do four episodes talking about your epic destiny.
Yeah. I think the other reason why I like this starting at low level is, doesn't matter the system that we've played, I like my character starting out really low and having a few things that I can use. And then as the character progresses, more interesting things come my way. And I dig that. And especially if you're learning a new system, I mean, there's no reason for you to start at anything other than maybe level one or two. But I'm kind of looking forward to Tomb of Annihilation. It arrives in September.
As someone who recently had to start a character at level 15 to join an extant party, there's something to be said for starting a character further down the line. It's definitely something that I wouldn't recommend for everyone.
Yeah, your character had to do that.
Well, yeah, and it's, I mean, that's kind of fun, but I agree with you. It is more fun to start at level one, except in as much that sometimes when you start at level one, you're like, oh man, haven't I done this already? I got to relearn everything.
Well, and maybe that is then an encouragement to, hey, you were a warrior last time, in this adventure, it's time for you to become the mage or the wizard, or now you're the healer, now you're the bard, or now you're the...
You're the drow bard.
Yeah.
Drawbard Thawne from the 30th century. Hi.
Tomb of Annihilation arrives on September 19th, 2017. It's got a $50 price tag for that. Hopefully it'll last you a little while. There is, and that's in just normal bookstores. If you have a friendly local gaming store in your area, the book will be available on September 8th. As I said, we will be reviewing and talking about that either on Critical Hit or Finally Friday or other places that are there. If you're on the Roll20 system, they've already incorporated all that stuff into Roll20, and they will be releasing that on September 19th. I got the access code today to go inside and look at everything. I haven't had a chance to do it yet, but one of the cool things that's coming in this release is a complete map of Ravenloft. Now, this is just one of these additions that they're doing on Roll20, but you get a complete map of the castle of Ravenloft that you can move through.
Oh, yeah. I remember being in Ravenloft. That was scary.
Yeah,
scary
now
stuff.
There was a Ravenloft, the module again, not too long ago. Let me see what else they have told me. Well, I guess this is the Curse of Strahd, which has just been updated onto Roll20. That's where you're getting the the Castle Ravenloft stuff. But I know that they will have Tomb of Annihilation added in there September approaches. So
the Curse of Strahd is actually showing up right after Holmes and Watson.
Yes.
No, wait, I'm sorry. That's the Curse of Lestrade. My bad.
Yes, yes, yes.
I always get those confused.
So that's Dungeons & Dragons. People are pretty excited about that, and I think we should be. So go and enjoy that. I believe there's also some stuff on the MMORPG. We'll also incorporate that as well. As I said, a new board game on the way and a lot more. I have a question next week on Munchkinland. We will talk about the upcoming Dungeons & Dragons board game in relation to other games like Gloomhaven and the like. Tune into Munchkinland next week for that. Matthew, it is just you and I, so it's not a whole lot to talk about. But I think in our reviews section this week, we've got a bunch of DC comics to talk about.
We do, and you should totally go first.
Oh, really? Okay, because I thought the Teen Titans Annual was out last week.
Maybe it was. Maybe it wasn't.
It said May 31st on there. That's why I was asking. But anyway, Batman 24 comes out this week, and I think it's one that a lot of people are going to want to grab. Now, I don't call it a perfect book. Tom King has been doing a great job of writing Batman and trying to dive into what makes Batman tick. And if you have been with the Batman series since the rebirth, you know that there have been two characters, Gotham, what's his name? Gotham and Gotham Girl.
Right.
And Gotham Girl is the one that's sticking around, and we find out that as she's in over the course of these issues, if you listen to our pre-show chatter over on patreon.com/majorspoilers, you heard Matthew and I talking about how the more she uses her powers, it weakens her and could kill her. So a lot of this issue, well, the entire issue, is Batman and Gotham Girl having a conversation about why do you do this? Should I be a superhero? And Batman's like, I'm not a superhero. I don't have powers. I could fly if I wanted to. I don't know what Clark means when he says up and away. And she's like, but I should be a hero, right? And he's like, I can't answer that question for you. And she's asking him questions like, why do you wear a suit? And he's like, you know, and it really becomes this psychological discussion of why is Batman doing all these things? Why did he decide to become a good person and not just turn into the bad side? And it really goes into, because if I did not do something, I would have gone insane. I would have done horrible things, and I didn't want to do that. And the only reason why I became Batman is because no one was there to tell me no. And I find that conversation that the two of them are having fascinating, but that's not what the cover of this issue shows. It shows Batman and Catwoman in an embrace with a big heart behind them.
Ooh.
This issue starts out with a question that says, I propose to you whether I should become a hero or not, and ends with a different kind of proposal. And it's all over the internets now. So I think we can safely spoil this one for you, that Batman proposes to Catwoman at the end of the issue.
Oh.
And I believe this is just a one shot. I think this is just an interlude issue, because I believe next month starts a new arc. Now, I'm sure the whole Catwoman, Batman, the Cat and the Bat romance will continue. What I find fascinating about this is that I don't know if it was in the first issue or one of the last times that I reviewed Batman on the show, I talked about how I loved the fact, yeah, this must have been in January. I love the fact that Batman remembers their first encounter one way, which is a Silver Age remembrance, and Catwoman remembers their first encounter another way, which is more their year one interaction. When they first met. That comes up again in this issue. And I think it's interesting because in one of those other multiverses, in one of those other ages, these two actually were married. Right?
Yes, on Earth 2, actually.
Yeah, so I know people are messing around with stuff, but I'm kind of interested in seeing if Selina and Bruce Wayne could actually be a married couple and do stuff. Now, back before the whole universe exploded and people went crazy, Selena was starting to walk to the side of light. And definitely in Convergence, we saw her character returning, trying to protect Gotham City and being the hero. But since 52 and everything went kablooey, she's been kind of one of those people that walks on the side of, I'm in it for me. And so I'm going to be interested to see if these two actually try to get married and how the entire hero-villain relationship works out.
Well, she's actually more hero than not, especially in the New 52.
Yeah, that's how I would normally portray her, but she's also not opposed to stealing something if she needs it.
Well, yeah, so anti-hero.
Yeah, so I'm really interested to see where this relationship goes. The art flip-flops back and forth because you have Batman and Gotham Girl having their conversation, and then you have the proposal on the rooftop. That takes place in the night. So there's two different artists on this. The art kind of works, but I do find it distracting when you bounce back and forth. And I always question myself when I see multiple artists on a book, if this was the intent or if this was a deadline issue. This isn't a perfect issue, but I think it's one that a lot of people are going to grab. And if it means that there's marriage in the DC universe again, that could actually point to good times ahead. It's a fascinating, it's a fascinating discussion. It is a real think piece that I think you will want to read multiple times. So it is worth the $2.99. I'm giving it 4 slices of meatloaf out of 5.
Nice.
What were you going to say, Matthew? Sorry.
No, it's okay. I think the biggest issue that I have always had with any of it is as long as Batman and Catwoman are having a relationship that doesn't feel incredibly puerile, like the issue where they were
getting on the rooftop. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just like, creepy.
Well, so the interesting thing, and again, I know I'm giving you a lot of spoilers for a book that is just out this week today, but like I said, it's all over the internet that Batman proposes to her. He says, hey, remember the first time I met? And she's like, yeah, it was on the street. He's like, no, on the boat when you stole the diamond. And she's like, no, it was on the street when you did da-da-da-da. And he's like, no, I remember this because I remember you. You stole that diamond. I kept that diamond, and that is the diamond that he is using to propose to her with.
That's illegal and also romantic.
Well, he could have bought it after he returned it, right?
That's ro-legal.
I mean, he is Bruce Wayne, multi-billionaire or trillionaire or whatever he's worth these days. But that thing of, I fell in love with you from the moment I saw you. Will you marry me? And, you know, that leading up to the proposal, Batman is having this conversation with Gotham Girl talking about how, you know, the reason why he fails so often is because he's scared of actually succeeding. And what it really is he having this discussion of, I'm scared of asking Selina to marry me. And it's a really interesting issue. Like I said, I think it has problems. I think that it requires multiple reads, and I think depending on how you read it from multiple points of view, you'll get different takes on it. But it was definitely a book I'm glad that I picked up to read this week.
That's cool.
Yeah. All right. Now, Matthew, last week we have the Teen Titans annual. This is a tie-in to the Lazarus.
The Lazarus contract, yes, which is sort of related to the Judas contract, which you may remember as a classic Teen Titans story.
Yeah.
The Lazarus contract has involved Deathstroke,
Slade Wilson,
getting involved with both teams, the Titans and the Teen Titans, in a secret plan, which had turned out to be to get his son back, his first son, Grant, who was the Ravager, who historically died in Teen Titans number 2. So on the one hand, we have a team of Nightwing, Flash, Wally West, Donna Troy, Arsenal, Tempest, and Omen. On the other hand, we have Robin, Kid Flash, Wally West, Beast Boy, Raven, Starfire, and Aqualad. Now, Tempest is not Aqualad. Aqualad is not Tempest. Omen is not Raven. Raven is not Donna Troy. Donna Troy is not Starfire, but
Flash totally is Flash.
Right, and Cyborg is off in the Justice League. I have issues keeping all this continuity straight, but what has happened is Deathstroke convinced young Wally from the Teen Titans to help him, and now Deathstroke has Wally's super speed and connection to the Speed Force, which he has used to Flashpoint and go back to save his son Grant before he dies. Which would be fine if it weren't for the fact that there are two other speedsters and two other Titans teams in play, and also two other children of Slade Wilson. So at some point during this issue, and it does get complicated because the Titans and the Teen Titans aren't necessarily getting along, and they are forced to team up with the Ravager's brother, Jericho, who's a new take, an entirely new take on Jericho, which I'm not sure I like. The things that I do like about this issue, Wally West's Flash costume is pretty awesome.
Which one?
The red and silver one.
Oh, okay.
They've renewed the open cowl, but they're keeping him in a look very similar to his 90s uniform with silver accents instead of gold. I like the fact that Kid Flash, Wally West, gets involved in this and has cut a lightning bolt into his hair, which okay. is something that Kenan Lonsdale really needs to look into next season.
No, because that gives away your secret identity.
But it gets even better because the Titans and the Teen Titans go back in time to meet the original Teen Titans, the younger version of the older Titans, including a Kid Flash who is Elder Wally West, younger, wearing the costume that younger Wally West is wearing now.
The yellow and red.
The yellow and red, the perfect Kid Flash uniform. Yeah. While they're in the past, Damian Wayne, say it with
ugh. Me. Ugh. Worst Robin ever.
Has the perfect idea to keep Slade from stealing power from Wally West in the future.
And let me guess, Damian's idea is to kill Wally West.
Yeah. He kills Wally West in the past. Damian
Wayne. It's like a book on the shelf, so easy to read.
Yep. He cut off Deathstroke's Speed Force power by killing the source of that power 15 years ago.
Oh, man, that is horrible.
Yeah, it gets interesting. This issue, I will say one thing that's very impressive about this issue. Paul Pelletier, or Pelletier, is an artist whom I've been, I'm going to be honest with you, avoiding since the 1990s, simply because his style is bloopy and round and floopy. This is inked by a man named Andrew Hennessy. Write that name down, because if you don't see Pelletier followed by Hennessy, you don't want it. This issue looks great. Whatever Hennessy is doing manages to square off the edges of those weird round Pelletier faces and make everybody look really cool. Deathstroke is interesting in these pages, which is almost unheard of, especially in the New 52, because a lot of times Deathstroke is just a shorthand collection of tough guy cliches. Here it really works. He's trying to save his lost son. And I blame part of that on the writing team, one of whom is Christopher Priest. I don't know if you're familiar with Priest's work. Priest is in this. Dan Abnett is in this.
He's good.
Yeah. The two creative teams from Titans and Teen Titans have come together to create an extremely complicated superhero-filled story that has a couple of shocking bits at the end and sets up what, if you read the solicitations, is coming, a new team that Deathstroke will be leading, which may or may not include one or two of the Titans or Teen Titans in this issue in their ranks. So that's something to look forward to. $4.99 is a little steep, but it is a 40-page comic. So I'm going to go with 3.5 slices of meatloaf for Titans Annual and or Special, depending on whether you're reading the indicia or the cover. Titans Special number one on the front cover. Interesting stuff. And aside from the fact that there are two teams with nearly identical names, with very similar characters, both of which have a Flash called Wally West, who travel back in time to meet a third team who's actually one of the first teams, only when they were younger, with a Kid Flash named Wally West. They're basically, the iterations of the Wally West issue kind of go through a wall here. But if you can get past that craziness, there's a good story and some surprisingly good art to be had.
So by the end of the issue, do we find out what happens to the dead Wally West?
I'm not saying.
Okay.
I'm just saying that Damian isn't entirely a jerk.
He's not entirely a horrible, stupid person.
Well, you know how sometimes you have Batman ninja powers and you can stop somebody's heart temporarily?
Oh, okay. With the magic ninja power touch?
Right.
Yeah,
I've got the touch! Ba-ba-bum. You got the ninja! Yeah!
Long ago and far away, I touched your heart and faded you away. You're a winner. Oh, sorry. Wrong song.
Now you're back from the dead. There, better believe this show's gone off the rails.
I'm a star. I'm a star. I'm a big, beautiful star. Thank you for that.
Same song. It's the same song. It is The Touch by boop, Stan boop, Bush.
Boo.
It is in both the Transformers and Boogie Nights. And if that's not creepy, just run.
And Boogie Nights. Boogie Nights, such a good movie. Okay, so listeners, head over to majorspoilers.com. Check out all the reviews and things that we have over there. We do have a couple of reviews of the new Wonder Woman movie. Ashley did a review for us on our YouTube channel, Major Spoilers Video, the Tuesday before the movie came out in theaters. And then if you listen to Geek History Lesson this week, she and what's his name? Whose name has completely slipped my mind. Jason.
Yeah.
Jason Sorry.
Inman,
who just had a birthday this past weekend. Happy birthday
Happy
to him.
Birthday.
They
What's
go into a giant spoiler filled review on Geek History Lesson number 165. So you'll want to go there for that. You'll also want to go check out our Pandemic Legacy game that Dr. Brad Will, myself, Brian and Rob have been playing for. Oh, my God. It seems like an eternity. We finally hit the month of June in that Pandemic Legacy game. You'll have to head to our YouTube channel, Major Spoilers Video, to see if we win or to see if we lose or who gets mad at who in this week. And hey, if you want to see shows like the Major Spoilers podcast and the YouTube videos that we produce and our reviews that we write, if you want to see all of that continue, then we could really use your help. And you can do that by going to patreon.com/majorspoilers. Patreon.com/majorspoilers. Matthew, do you know what you will find when you go over there?
I do, but you should tell us anyway.
Well, you're going to find original content. You're going to find bonus episodes for things. Like I mentioned, Matthew and I did a little pre-show last week that we shared with everyone. Maybe that could be something that's a regular feature if we get enough contributors. Regular secret pre-show, huh? We also have the Flashback podcast over there. And when you sign up for $2, $5, $10, $25, $40 a month, we do have, and people may be going, there's people that pledge $40 a month. We have people that are pledging $100 a month because they are awesome and want to see this show continue. When you pledge at higher amounts, you get access to more things. You get access to our monthly live chat for our $10 and up members. You get exclusive t-shirts, original art, some very cool exclusive original art, membership cards, stickers, and a whole lot more. You can find out more by going to patreon.com/majorspoilers. If you enjoy the show, sign up for the $5 a month level. $5 is not a whole lot, and it goes a long way for us.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
Mock. Yeah.
Yeah. At the beginning of the show, Matthew, in the news section, you said that you didn't want to talk about Sin City TV series in the works.
No.
However, we learned today that a live-action adaptation of the anime series Cowboy Bebop is in the works.
B-Boy Cowbop?
Have you ever watched Cowboy Bebop? It is like one of my favorite animes. If I had to put it up there, it'd be like Akira, which is a movie, but then like Cowboy Bebop would be the TV series. And honestly, before I heard this news just the other day, I was like, you know what? I know there's some blood and guts and some weird things that go on in that, but I bet my 10-year-old would totally be into Cowboy Bebop if I showed it to him. And he's home for the entire summer. I think I should, especially because some of the topics and things that they get into, I think would be really good. But there's that one episode with the pregnant woman and the whole thing with the death and the blah, blah, blah. Might be a little bit too much for him.
The one where they're all high and just.
That's the one. Yeah. But I love the world of Cowboy Bebop. And so I heard that they were making this live action adaptation and my initial reaction is nope, don't want to see it. And so that brings us to the Major Spoilers poll of the week.
Poll of the week,
poll. See you, Space Cowboy.
Poll. I'm interrupting him saying poll to say
Matthew, I've already said answered the question, do you want to see a live action adaptation of Cowboy Bebop? I say no, not. Here's the thing. You can create so much in a real world environment. You can only go so far with your special effects and all the stuff before it becomes cost prohibitive.
Right.
But you can sit down with a bunch of people with their pencils and their inks and their computers and all their stuff, and you can crank out some fantastic worlds that you could only do in animation or in a pure 3D environment. And so I really think that a live-action adaptation of Cowboy Bebop, especially if it's following a series that fans know by heart, is actually going to do, personally, I feel that that is going to do a disservice to the original source material.
Yeah. When you say to me, do you want to see a live action adaptation of Cowboy Bebop? It's, well, it comes with a caveat, because the answer is no, but not because I feel that Cowboy Bebop shouldn't be adapted. It's that I don't necessarily want to see a live action adaptation of anything, because a lot of times people say, oh, this is better in live action, or it's going to be live action that somehow makes it legitimate. As far as I'm concerned, the cartoon, the original material, is perfectly fine as is, you know, just like this live action Akira that they keep trying to
roll out,
sell us.
Yeah.
They're like every 2 years, like clockwork. It's like, hey, man, we're going to do a live action Akira. And people go, don't.
You can
don't
only do it. You can only do the bloaty monster thing at the end in animation. You can't do that in live action.
You could do it with enough CGI. Yeah, hell, you could do it with bad CGI and it'd probably still look right. But I feel like the expectation that a live action adaptation of something is better comes with a lot of limitations. I mean, Supergirl on TV is amazing, but it is no Supergirl that we've ever seen before.
That's true.
And it is a Supergirl who doesn't do the same things as the Supergirl that we saw in the comics for very good reasons. And I think that that's the biggest problem you're going to run into. A live action Cowboy Bebop is essentially going to be a new Cowboy Bebop.
It would have to be.
Depending on how much new you put in there, it may no longer be Cowboy Bebop. So I'm not interested in an adaptation of it because, you know, Spike Spiegel is cool.
Oh, man.
But who are you going to get to play him?
We can get what's his name?
With the face on his head?
From
the elbow,
that everybody loves from Scott Pilgrim.
Michael Cera is like 35 years old.
Yeah, we'll get him. Well, how old do you think Spike Spiegel is?
I don't know, 15?
No.
But this is something else.
Here's my fear is that a live action Cowboy Bebop would not be the nuanced relationship family adventure won't. That you get in the animated series.
No,
it would be a hey, we are space cowboys. We are the posse or whatever they are, bounty hunters. And that's what the show would be.
It's going to be straightforward adventure.
Yeah,
it's
straightforward bounty hunter adventure.
It's going to lose all of its nuance, all of the ambiguity. It's probably going to make Faye stupid. So, I don't know. I mean, I'm being super negative here.
I know. We really shouldn't. And we talk about that a lot, that we shouldn't be negative. But my goodness, I spent a lot of money back in the day on acquiring some original anime Cowboy Bebop cells. Yeah. That I love those cells. And I look at those cells of Faye and Spike, and I just can't imagine that being turned into a live action series.
Right. I will caveat this. You know, not being negative, not being super, they can't do it. Oh, well.
They'll do it.
I'll tack my tail back on tomorrow. I will say this. I feel like the concerns about a live action adaptation that you're going to hear a lot of people howling about are valid. And to me, from my perspective, outweigh most of the possibility that it'll be something new and different and awesome. So. You know, not meaning.
Well,
to be
so let's look at it. Let's look at it from a different perspective.
Okay.
I'm going to be the person who pitches this story. Hey, TV executive person who's looking for ratings.
Sorry, no, not interested. Go home.
Back in the day, back in the 90s,
security.
There was this animated series called Cowboy Bebop about these people in space who hunted bounties and were always down on their luck. And there's a smart dog and a really intelligent girl and this sexy girl who rides a space bike. And it's all really cool. The problem is, this is an anime. And you know how anime is. I mean, nobody in America watches anime. No one even knows what it is. But I think that this is a property ripe for the pickings. And we can bring this Cowboy Bebop franchise to a whole bunch of people who've never heard of it, and we can make a killing, and we can make a lot of money. And that's my guess on how it's pitched.
Has anyone seen Security?
I mean,
because this brown-headed kid is still over here.
That's my guess, and it's just from, you know, it's just like the why are comic book movies so popular, and because people don't read the source material, but they're familiar enough with it from our culture that, hey, I'll go see a Captain America or I'll go see a Wonder Woman movie because it's awesome. And even though I've never read a comic in the last 30 years, but I know that I can plunk my $10 down, and Warner Brothers is making a crap ton of money off of that, and Marvel's making a crap ton of money off of that, and their comic books are selling, you know, 10,000 copies a month.
Yeah, almost 11. I think that there could be something here, but we're going to have that same question, and this is the question that I ask you. In your head, is Spike Spiegel a Japanese person?
He is.
Some people will say yes.
I know some people will say yes, and I always say no. Ayn is more of an Asian person than I would say Spike is, and Faye is definitely European.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean,
that whole question of Ghost in the Shell all over again is definitely going to raise its ugly head.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And I think that is a consideration and a concern. And more importantly, the answer to that question is going to be a deal breaker for some people. So you have to be ready to answer that question. And I don't think they're going to be. But, you know, in a worst case scenario, they make 8 episodes, and it's kind of okay, and it rolls off the end of the pier, and nobody talks about it.
Yeah, it'll probably be like that Krypton show over on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Oh, yeah, that was awful.
No, it hasn't come out yet.
Hello, future people. Remind everyone how it was awful. Yeah, okay, I saw an episode of Gotham the other day.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, don't. Just don't.
I haven't seen it. Somebody chastised me, apparently. I think it was aimed at you. But they're like, Gotham is not a procedural. I was like, I don't believe I'm the one that said it was a procedural.
Well, I just trying to. You can make that argument.
I'm sure you can. But the question is
also
poll.
The fact that Gotham is, you know, not good.
No. So. Oh, well, apparently the season finale was pretty bad. that brings us back to the poll of the week this week, Matthew.
Week. For the thousands in attendance. And for Nathan Olson, currently Charles somewhere in Florida. He is the Florida man cheering that I'm doing this again.
Want to see a live action adaptation of Cowboy Bebop? You said no. How has everyone voted so far?
Everyone is not voting entirely with us, but about a 2-to-1 average. Right now, 68% of the vote saying no, 32% yes, which, yeah, that's not a terrible average. I mean, 32% of 100 is like 32 people. So, I mean, you have a decent percentage of a theoretical audience, assuming that that's a meaningful sample size. So,
yeah.
Even at 30%, you're going to get the occasional people who are like, I'm going to watch this for the train wreck procedure, you know?
Well, I mean, go online. You can find really cool live action fan films that have been done of the intro of that show. And I love the, Yoko Kanna?
Yokozuna.
I forget who does the theme song.
No, Yokozuna was a professional wrestler. My bad.
Now I'm going to not be able to,
Yoko Ono.
No, it's not Yoko Ono. Tokoyaki? I think it's Yoko Kanna. I think it's Tank is the name of the song. And Yoko Kanno, K-A-N-N-O, with her band, the Seatbelts. I've got all their albums. I've got all of the Cowboy Bebop albums. I had to import them from Japan back in the day before the iTunes music became a big deal. So there you go.
Yeah, back before streaming music took over.
Yeah, before, you know, before people even knew what music was.
It was uphill both ways. We were just out there banging rocks together. And somebody said, hey, this sounds like noise.
Yeah.
And that's the first time anybody ever said that.
Listeners, head over to MajorSpoilers.com, cast your vote in the Major Spoilers Poll of the Week, then use the comment section to defend or to criticize whether this should be done or not. Is this going to be an abomination? Is it something that people should never do? How are they going to? How much hairspray budget do they have?
Right.
That's what you can talk about.
Are you going to get a wig?
It would have to be like a wig,
just a
right?
Pineapple glued to his head. You know what they'll probably do?
It's going to be some awful wig. Remember how in the Future Barry had that god awful wig that they made Grant Gustin wear?
Yeah.
It'll probably be like that, and unfortunately, it won't be all spiked up. It'll be all combed down and sloppy.
It is possible to simulate Spike Spiegel hair. They did it for Captain Marvelous.
Oh yeah,
Go Kaiser.
Well,
if you
look
at what they did with Marvelous, his hair is perfect.
Go look at Faye Valentine's costume, and how are they going to pull that off?
Crazy glue.
Probably.
Gonna have to.
Hey, this week we have an interesting trade paperback that I was really hoping Ashley would have been here to talk with us about, because I believe she is a fan of this book. Mm-hmm. I just remember that the creators had sent me like a preview a while ago, and just the preview pages alone, I looked at it and I said, I'm very interested in this because it's a world of magic peoples and it's a world of romance. And I wanted to see where that story went. And so
it's a world of magic, a world of sex.
Yeah, it is. It's Destiny New York, Volume 1, Who I Used to Be, where we follow the adventures of Logan McBride as she struggles to find her purpose in life. Apparently, not everyone has the ability to have magic, but if you do have magic in this world, you have something called a prophecy in which you that you will fulfill. And you will go to school to figure out what your prophecy will be, or to help you prepare to fulfill your prophecy. Like one kid has to go kill the demon from the nether region. And that is his destiny. That is his prophecy. And the more important your prophecy is, the more you get to go to more important, bigger schools. And the biggest school that deals with this, or the most popular school that we learn about in this book, is the Destiny University in Destiny, New York. And that's where Logan McBride, who's a girl, winds up in this story, as we find out. But this is not just, a Harry Potter ripoff, which I know a lot of people just from that description are probably thinking this is. There's also a huge love story in this, in that Logan is gay, and she's involved with some really cool girls. And one of the girls that she falls in love with in this story, Lilith, turns out to be someone else's prophecy on killing them.
She turns out to be a great evil Logan's friends. Logan's friend Gia, who
she's also had a relationship with.
Well, I don't know about a relationship, but at least a long weekend.
Yeah.
But she and Gia have kind of a flirtation thing going on, and Gia's prophecy is to kill a great evil, which ends up being Lilith. Which I think is kind of an interesting take on it's not even a love triangle, but the concept of a love triangle kind of gets tweaked.
I can totally see that take. I did not get that take when I read this, because Gia doesn't find out until much later in the story that Logan and Lilith are having a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
When I read this book, to me, it felt a lot like Sunstone, except it's not BDSM. It's just, romance with magic. But a lot of the interactions with the people felt that way. And I'll tell you straight out, I will say 90% of the straight people in this book are bad guys.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I mean, it's totally works. And I totally see where they're going with it, but it was interesting. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think that the comparison with Sunstone is valid in as much as you don't always get characters who are sexual in a positive, almost matter-of-fact kind of way. This is something where we're going along, and Logan is like, yeah, Gia's great. We kind of had a thing, and then she flashes back, and their thing was, they locked in a room and did the sexy stuff that teenagers do. And that's cool. I like that take. In fact, one of the earliest things that Logan says that caught my eye was how much she really has to go pee.
Mm-hmm.
This feels like a realized universe, and the characters like, even though they're magical and they're, they're chosen ones looking for their density,
These are identity.
They're very realistic characters. And I do like, you know what I really like? I like the fact that the flirtation between Logan and Lilith takes place on panel.
Yeah.
They have a kind of a meet cute, or in this case, a meet douche, because there's some guy catcalling her on the street and Lilith gets involved.
Right.
But I like the authenticity of the voices. I like the way these characters interact. And I like the fact that these people have sex lives, and it's not a plot point. It's not, a bad person because she had sex and now she's gonna pay.
Yeah, it's sex positive. It is, I guess the word is gay positive or queer positive. It's really that way, where it's just like, it's supernatural, and not supernatural, but it's very natural for these relationships to exist in this world.
It is also supernatural, but that's a different part of the story.
So you've got the supernatural aspect, the magical aspect of this story, and about, you know, people filling their prophecies. You've got the romance side of it. Then we also have the existential angst part of this book, because one of the reasons why you go to Destiny University is so that you can fulfill your potential. Well, almost as soon as she gets in, Logan fulfills her prophecy. And so now she's been built up to be one of these great, great kids with great potential. And now she's trying to figure out, what is she going to do with the rest of her life now that she's peaked?
It's such a metaphor for being a kid and being told that you're gifted, you're smart, you're whatever. And then having to figure out what to do with that. How are you going to make a life out of that? And I really enjoy that part where, she's a chosen one, but she was chosen to do something and she totally did that. And now what?
Yeah.
She still has to figure out how to get through life when you have, you know, two cute facial moles.
And are they facial moles or tattoos or birthmarks? I couldn't figure out what they were, but they were cute.
I read them as just cute little moles under her left eye that, you know, make her feel kind of
like
awesome.
She's droopy and crying all the time because she is.
Oh, you know what? I'm Logan.
I don't like you.
That's a different kind.
I don't
of
like
it.
You very much. I didn't know anything about this book, right? Except for the 5 or 6 pages that we featured up on Major Spoilers months ago. But just from those pages, you get Logan's kind of story, that she was in a romance with someone. She proposed to this girl. The girl turned her down, and now the girl is engaged to a guy. And, you know, at the same time, there's magic involved. And I'm like, oh, man, this sounds really good. And I wasn't prepared for this fantastic story that Pat Shand and Manuel Pritiano, I believe. Sorry on the mispronunciation. But I wasn't prepared for this great story that they told, in that I know a lot of people will point at this book and say, it's a gay book. It's for the LGBT community. It's not for me. It totally is for you. It doesn't matter. Yeah. You know, the sexual aspect, sexual orientation aspect of this book is important, but it's not what defines these characters, I don't think.
And this is, you know, this is a thing where I think it would be good to have the younger generation of podcast hosts on here, because I'd really like to hear Ashley as part, I think, of the demographic that this is aimed at, part of that 20 something generation. They're at a point in their lives where this is actually happening to a lot of people.
But
even Rodrigo, I think, would have a different take on it. But here's the important bit. We are a couple of boring old married cishet white guys, and this is an attractive, entertaining, really fun read.
Yeah, yeah. I really enjoyed this. And there's a volume 2 that's about to be kickstarted in September. And I may back this because I really enjoyed this book a lot. I want to see what their adventures are next. I want to see if Lilith and Logan work out. You know, I want to see if these kids can get married or whatever happens next, right?
I don't know what they're going to work out, but boy, if they do, either way, it's going to be fireworks and it's going to be fun.
Yeah. And so I really enjoyed the story. I realized that for LGBTQ community, this is really, really an important book. And I think it is too. And I enjoy the magical aspects of it. I enjoyed the character interactions. I enjoyed the, subterfuge. Is that what I'm looking for?
A little bit.
The
Cloak and dagger stuff.
Yeah, there's some cloak and dagger stuff going on. It's just a really incredible world that they've created, and I do want to read more of it. And I just like these characters, and they seem to be on the page fully formed. I could not find, you know, like, oh, this character is so shallow or whatever. Even they're in this volume, there is a throughout the story, people are mentioning all these things that they did on a weekend or something that happened. And then in the final chapter of this book, it's telling you what really happened during all of these bull sessions that people are talking about throughout the book. You actually really get to see what happens, like what happened moments before Lilith saw Logan coming down the street and having her interaction with the stupid dude bro. You find out what happens to the one guy who's bragging that he actually went out and almost defeated the Dark Lord. Is really good. It's just really, really good, you guys. I came away with this with a bigger smile on my face than I thought I was going to have.
Yeah, I did not know what to make of this. Page 130 nearly made me cry.
What's on that page?
The President of the United States.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Which is a beautiful, perfect moment. And again, kind of a wish fulfillment moment for me. But it's also, I think there's a cleverness in the way the magic works and the way it interacts with the relationships and the authentic feel to the characters and the relationships is amazing. I mean, I can sit here and just go from page to page, and there are these wonderful moments where I'm like, yeah, I love that. That's great. This is an incredible panel. I kind of hate Lilith. At the same time, I can see why she's in love with Lilith. You can read through this whole book, and even though I am certainly nowhere near the demographic that I think is the natural target audience. I feel like I am the target audience because this appeals to me. This hit me in a way that really works. I was talking this weekend to somebody about some of my favorite music. No matter what the decade, no matter what the genre, if you can get me some teenage angst BS music, I'm in. And to some degree, this ties into that universal feeling of now I have to go. And I think they call it adulting. I have to go adulting now, or perhaps I need to adult. Using adult as a verb is one of the things that the cool, hip, young people do. I don't know. I come from a generation where we made Billy Ray Cyrus famous, so I'm not casting aspersions at anybody. But this book appeals.
Well, just keep in mind the generation following made his daughter famous, so there you go.
Yeah, well, she's more talented than he is.
Oh, okay. All right.
You know, she's a 17-hit wonder.
All right.
But also, this is relatable material.
Yeah,
this is perfectly relatable, universal material. And the main characters, I really appreciate the fact that Gia is heavy.
Yeah. That's one of the things that I want to talk about is there is all body shapes and sizes in here, and they're all presented positive. Now, before, you know, some listeners might be going, so is this all just girl-girl action? No, there is a male-male couple in this book, too. And they're having some relationship troubles. And one of them's, you know, a skinny, preppy looking dude. And the other one's a heavy dude that that plays video games all day. And it's really fascinating looking into their lives and seeing how they're dealing with stuff. So, the body positivity in this book is very strong as well.
Yeah, there are things here that remind me of Love and Rockets, which some serious high praise. There are things here that remind me of the work of Neil Gaiman in comics in a very good way. Mm-hmm. And it ties it all together in a way that it's not like anything you've read before. Even the bits and pieces of it where you're like, well, isn't this like Harry Potter? No, shut up. it comes from a similar place, a similar sort of setup. Well, it's like, you know how you get dominoes? And you set up the dominoes and then...
Oh, I thought you meant like the pizza place. And I was like, no, I don't know how you set up dominoes.
You set up your dominoes and you knock the dominoes over. And some people are really clever and make the dominoes fall over and then shape into Snoopy or something.
Yeah.
It's like that. It's dominoes. It's those dominoes are the same dominoes that you might have seen in a Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm.
But when you knock them down, they make a completely different pattern, and it's really excellent stuff.
Yeah, the art is fantastic. Now it is black and white.
Oh my god!
No. It's really solid. So don't let that distract you if you can get your hands on a copy of this. Here's the other thing: is I and we've talked about people having a lot of sex in the page. Yes, there are people that are having sex, but this is not a, what's the word? Prurient stuff.
It's not an issue of Penthouse Comics.
No, it's not. And even though there are naked bodies lying on top of each other on a couch, you're not seeing anything that would get you in trouble.
It's sexuality. It's sexy, but it's not pervy.
Right.
And that's something that's very important, too, because, you know, as a guy reading sex scenes between two women, it can go to a creepy place. This is not about me as the male gaze, the metaphorical male gaze looking at this. This is a natural extension of these two characters met. They have incredible chemistry. They go home and they accidentally jump each other's bones.
No, they didn't accidentally. They were into each other from the moment their eyes first met. She literally says in the page, I kind of want her to sit on my...
Yeah, that's a beautiful moment.
It is.
It's a perfect moment. And another example of Logan having perfectly normal, perfectly positive sexuality.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah, so what I'm saying is go rush right out in a buying frenzy.
I'm going to agree with you on this, Matthew, and I don't know if this is something that you're going to be able to easily get in your comic book store, but I believe, I'm not seeing it up on Comixology, but definitely go do a search for Destiny New York, Destiny Common New York, Volume 1, Who I Was. I believe that's what it is. Oh, I'm sorry. Who I Used to Be. There's actually a link over at Major Spoilers right now. If you go over to the podcast posting page for this episode, I've got a link over to Amazon, and you can buy it over there at Amazon for, you know, $15. It's totally worth $15. I'm giving this a strong thumbs up. I'm glad that this book is out there. I enjoyed it. And I don't, you know, I know some people will criticize it, but I could find nothing that was a real problem for me. I liked all of the characters. I like the situations that they're being put in. I like the world that's here. I like that it's friendly and representative, and it's just really good. Two thumbs up from me.
Well drawn. It's well assembled. The storytelling is clear. There are a lot of characters, but there's never any trouble. Sometimes you have that moment of, I have to get the name straight, but you never have any trouble telling who it is on the page.
Oh, right.
Gia is always Gia. Logan is always Logan. You can go through and see the design is solid enough that you can tell even from, you know, a faraway shot who you're looking at, which I think is great. Mm-hmm. So I do wish that the rest of the podcast had been here.
Yes.
To be a part of this, but you know what? I missed Armor Wars, and you guys got that wrong.
There is one thing that bothered me about this now that I think about it.
Oh, what's that?
It's set in New York, yet to me it felt like it had a very distinct, in the way that not just one or two characters talked, but the way a lot of characters talked, it made me feel like the writer is not from the United States, but perhaps from England. Because they use words like wanker a lot, and I'm not sure that hipsters use wanker as a phrase. Do they? Okay.
The kids say wanker now. The kids say wanker and bollocks because they're on the Tumblr with kids who are in.
Okay. Because that was the one weird thing that I was like, wait, is this New York or is this supposed to be just a euphemism for New York? I didn't know. But sometimes the language just made me feel like it was more British English than American.
Well, sometimes that happens, and you have to be British.
Well, if one of the characters might be that way, that's fine. But there were multiple people saying, colloquialisms. But
if you hang out with a British person, as I've been known to do, sometimes you start to talk like that person. I have a very close friend. Her name is Abigail.
I was going to say and Dick Van Dyke hang out a lot, do you? Because you sound just like him.
Oh, oh, you suck.
Matthew, thank you so much for being on the Major Spoilers podcast. Where can people find you?
You can find me on the Tumblr at Mighty King Cobra. I believe the actual Tumblr name is A City Much Like Newark. If you know that reference, I'll give you $1. You have to find me first. You can find me on the Twitter at Mighty King Cobra as well. And also at Major Spoilers, our lovely podcasts. I try to review as much as I can. And in a worst case scenario, you could probably throw a rock at a fat guy and you got a 1 in 100 chance.
There you go. You can follow me at Major Spoilers. Of course, check out our website, majorspoilers.com. Again, if you enjoyed this episode, patreon.com/majorspoilers. We certainly appreciate your support, and I certainly appreciate your support from the bottom of my heart. That will be it for this week. Thank you for being part of the Major Spoilers experience. We will be back next week to talk about the one and only Living Boy, because we know that you love comics and we do too, and we will talk with you soon.
Stop talking about comic books or I'll kill you.
This podcast is copyright 2017 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.